Morning, everyone. So good to be with you sharing this morning and starting off the series that we're doing on Ruth. It's been, great in the last couple of weeks delving into this book and kind of finding out what it's about and discovering all the gold that is in it for us. It's a very interesting book, Ruth. Hadn't read much of it before. It's very short, only 3 pages in my Bible, and it's wedged right there in the middle of the Old Testament. You could miss it quite easily in between Judges and 1 Samuel. And it's interesting, very different from a lot of the other books in that same part of the Bible. It's not about big judges or kings fighting big battles or prophets declaring God's word to the nations. Instead, it's about a very ordinary family, an ordinary group of people, and their kind of responses when stuff goes wrong in their lives, as they kind of encounter the very normal, very real, ordinary problems that all of us still encounter today, and their responses to some of these challenges that they face are very interesting and have a lot to teach us. It's very hard to escape through life unscathed without things going awfully wrong at some given moments. For me, I have a moment that particularly sticks in my memory where everything seemed to go wrong. I'd been working as a youth worker over at the church across town for a number of years, and I'd just become the key leader, the youth pastor there. And I got really excited about this, but I was also quite nervous. It was my first night in my new role, and I wanted everything to go really, really well. So I planned everything out meticulously. I wanted it to go as smoothly and as well as possible to make a good first impression. But things slowly started to unravel for me on the day of the youth night. The speaker who was going to do our talk got really sick and said he couldn't come anymore. He cancelled on the 11th hour. And then just before our program started, it started to pour outside with rain. And we had a long list of outside activities that we were planning to do at youth group. So our entire program was kind of went up in flames, really, and I had to kind of hodgepodge together a little bit of a makeshift program to make it work. But we were still all right. The show was still semi on the road. And instead, we were playing these games inside because it was pouring outside. And during one of these games, I was running around a corner, and I collided with one of the young people. We ran around this blind corner and our foots just smashed together. Went straight into my toe, but it went straight into his ankle, which was pretty brutal. My toe was really, really sore. I couldn't walk properly on it for a couple of days after that. But unfortunately, for the young person, he came off even worse. And we suspected perhaps he'd had a breakage in his ankle. So I made the phone call that no youth worker ever wants to make, which is the phone call to a parent saying, I think we've broken your son's ankle. So we called, and you might want to take him to hospital. So we called up the parent, they came, they took away the kid. I sat out the rest of the youth evening. I can't really remember what was happening. I was icing my toes to try and make me able to walk again. And that was that. On the way home, one of the other leaders, who was also my flatmate, she said to me, well, Zach, I'm sure next week will go better for you. I mean, it kind of has to, doesn't it? It can't be any worse than that. Which was a great start for me, and we could kind of laugh about it after that. But it did remind me something very important, and that is, that no matter how much we might plan or want something to happen in a certain way, we can't avoid the reality that sometimes things are going to unravel and things are going to go wrong. The unavoidable does happen, and it happens to us often throughout our lives. And this story at the start of Ruth is full of things like this going wrong. The time that they lived in was the time of the judges, and this was a real time of upheaval in Israel. There's a lot of instability and a lot of uncertainty around economics and rulers and safety. And as we heard, there was a big famine that struck the land. Famines were a really, really big deal in those days. They relied on the rain for sources of food and sources of water. So we see that this family, Elimelech, Ruth, and their sons, they leave. So they leave the chosen land, their promised land, their homeland, and go over to Moab, which is a fair distance away and is a foreign country. So they run away from this economic tragedy, this famine that has struck their land, and then they get confronted with yet more tragedy. Mahlon and Chilion married. They married Ruth and they married Orpah, who's the Moabite woman. But soon after that, Elimelech, Naomi's husband, dies. And then about a decade later, Mahlon and Chilion also die. And so this leaves Naomi, with her two daughters-in-law, who are Orpah and Ruth, in a foreign land for Naomi, and they've got no husband, her sons are both dead, and she's kind of left really high and dry. And the way that all three of the characters respond to the situation is very, very interesting. We can kind of sense from the story that Naomi has really given up. In her spirit, in her heart, she feels very defeated. She's quite resigned to her fate. And you could say that this is very much fair enough. She has a right to be bitter. She's had, all sorts of tragedy strike her, and she's getting on in years. She doesn't have the opportunity to remarry. Her kind of lot in life has kind of been set. And what she does is to try and give her daughters-in-law, Orpah and Ruth, the chance to have a brighter future. She tells them to go back to their people, back to their homeland, to stay in Moab and to remarry and have a chance for that good life. And she said, whatever happens to me will happen to me. You guys just go and try and make the best out of yourselves. And what Orpah does is she follows this from Naomi, which is a very fair enough response. She's been given an out to try and restart life, have a bit of a reset after the death of her husband, and get her life back on track. However, Ruth responds very differently. Instead of leaving Naomi, she pledges herself to Naomi, as we heard read out earlier in one of the most famous and one of the most beautiful verses in the Old Testament, where she says, essentially, whatever the cost, whatever may happen to us, I will stay with you, Naomi. I will remain loyal to you. I will remain faithful. And even though I don't know where this road leads, I'm in it together with you. And even though she was a Moabite, even though she wasn't an Israelite, she pledged herself to the Israelite God and said, I will be faithful to your God, and whatever he has in store for us, I'm up for that journey. And this was a decision that would have made very little sense in terms of Ruth's goals, where she was as a single foreign woman going back to Israel with her widowed mother-in-law. Her future would have been very uncertain. But yet her response, this response of great love, this response of faithfulness to Naomi, but also to God, sets the tone for the rest of the book and has such a great and powerful effect, this act of love, this abundant act of love, and really changes the trajectory of both her life, but also of Naomi's life. That verse is really the heart of what the story's about and why. Yeah, it's such a powerful statement to us about faithfulness, even when the chips are down. Growing up, I'm one of five kids, so we had, as you can imagine, a lot of feuds amongst me and my siblings as we were growing up. We used to bicker and argue quite a bit, and these confrontations often would turn physical, and it would inevitably end with someone running to mum, crying, saying, so-and-so did this or so-and-so did that. And whenever we were kind of confronted, put in these pressure situations, we'd always come out with our fists swinging, metaphorically, where we'd say, oh, look, I was in the right, this happened to me, they did this, they wronged me first, I was just responding. I had a right to act the way I did. But my mum had this saying that she'd always use, and it drove us crazy. She'd say, your response is your responsibility. It doesn't matter what they did or what happened to you, it's always up to you. You always have a choice on how you respond to stuff when stuff goes wrong. That's on you. You can't blame that on anyone else. And I think that's a very interesting kind of sentiment to take back into this story. We see Naomi, she gets very bitter and angry. She tries to shut out God and with good reason as well. But Ruth kind of defies that odds, defies that logic, and that act of love, that act of faithfulness to Naomi and to God, that powerful response, not responding with victimhood or responding, with anger or resentment, is just such a powerful message for us. We see as well in wider society these same forces, these same ideas are coming into play as we struggle to cope with adversity and struggle to deal with what life throws at us. A couple of hundred years ago, in Lisbon in Portugal, there was a very famous earthquake in 1755. They believe it was one of the biggest earthquakes in modern history. It was measured around 8.5 on the Richter scale. And there was huge 5-metre chasms, fissures that emerged in the middle of the city streets. It was quite dramatic. And the centre of the earthquake was just out to sea. So half an hour after the earthquake struck, a large tsunami came and struck the city. The day that the earthquake and tsunami happened was the 1st of November, which back then is when they celebrated All Saints' Day, which means there were many candles and fires lit throughout the city to celebrate the festival. And after the movement of the earthquake, many of these candles burst into flame, and there was a firestorm that raged across what was remaining of the already battered and broken city for hours and hours. They believe that across these three events of the earthquake, then the tsunami, and then the fire, up to 100,000 people's lives were taken. And there was a very interesting response post this tragedy in Europe, where vast numbers of people struggled to understand why God would let such a thing happen or would do such a thing. There was a big faith wrestling in the political and the philosophical spheres. And what happened as a result of that is there was a big emergence of scepticism, and many people walked away from the church, walked away from God, saying that if there was a God and if he was good, then this doesn't marry up with these terrible tragedies happening. And we contrast that with another similarly large-scale tragedy, which was post-World War II in America, where a very different trend happened. So in the 1920s and the 1930s, in the lead-up to the war, there was a bit of an emergence of an intellectual elite in America, and they kind of decided that they as a society, were kind of starting to be okay without God, that they didn't really need God anymore. And there was kind of a move towards people being self-sufficient, and people were starting to move away from the church. However, after the tragedy that was the war, that trend was completely reversed, where people couldn't comprehend the layer of suffering and the layer of tragedy that happened in their world that caused by the war, and were searching for meaning, searching for something deeper, searching for something authentic. And this was one of the biggest migrations back towards the church that's happened in the Western world. And looking at these stories, I think we can realise that we can't run away from suffering. We can't have a theology that only works when God gives us good things all the time. We know that that's not what really happens. That's not how the world works. We need to have a theology that instead we understand and believe and trust in God's faithfulness, and that even though bad stuff may happen and even though we're confronted with adversity, having a posture of faith and a posture of trust towards God that we can hold, that even though he may not feel very present or real with us now, that he does have a plan for us and that he does want the best for us. And in the long term, all will be made well. In this story, we know that God, we find out later, God was very present still with Naomi and Ruth. He hadn't abandoned them. And he does have a plan for them and a plan for them to prosper. But none of this would have happened if it weren't for Ruth's gesture of faithfulness and of love towards Naomi, saying that we're in this together, we can get through it. And let's trust in God, even though we can't understand from this position we are now why he's let what has happened happen. This season we're currently in October, in our AYM community, is a time of discernment, where whatever year we've had, everyone from our community, all 40 or so of us, have a bit of an examine of our lives and recommit that process of going, what does God want for us next year? And asking God what he wants for us, and kind of pledging ourselves to be faithful again to God's call on our lives. And some of us that will be coming from a very difficult, rocky year where God felt absent, where things have been very tough. But for others of us, we'll be coming from great years where things have gone exactly to plan and we feel like we're best friends with Jesus and all's right with the world. But it doesn't matter what space we come from, we all come together as a community and we discern and listen to God and hear what he wants us to do next. And part of why we do it together is this process, as we can kind of see from how the story unfolded, that it's so important to be with each other and to be journeying with each other, so that when the chips are down, when life feels hard, we can trust and rely on each other, and we can lift each other up, even when all things feel like they're turning against us. And that's why I think this is such a great story. It speaks to us in the ordinary and the very harsh at sometimes reality of life. I don't think anyone could ever go through life without feeling like at least at some point God has let them down. And even Jesus felt like this when he was on the cross. He was crying out, "God, God, why have you forsaken me?" And Naomi, even though she turns bitter, she does hang in there. She does return back to her people, returns to the land of Israel. And with kind of the help of Ruth, and with, buoyed by Ruth's enthusiasm, their fortunes begin to turn around later on in the book. And I think for us, the big takeaways is to ask those questions of ourselves, that when things are tough, do we truly believe that God is trustworthy and faithful? When we are low and when we feel like we've been let down, do we turn to him, or do we take it upon ourselves to sort ourselves out and go, we can't rely on God anymore. We need to get ourselves out of here, and then maybe we'll think about God afterwards. And also, as the example was so beautifully made by Ruth, how good are we at supporting each other and relying and depending upon each other in those same situations, knowing that even when we are feeling low, our friends can come and help pick us up, and their faithfulness and their trust can become our faithfulness and our trust. And in that way, we can carry each other with the knowledge that at the end, God does want to make it, always wants to make it right for us. I'll close now if we want to have a time of prayer. Dear Lord, I thank you for the story of Ruth and of Naomi, Lord. Thank you, for the example of your faithfulness to Ruth and Naomi, even when they were feeling hard done by, Lord. And I pray that you'd help us to be more and more like Ruth, that even when it's hard to see where you are and what you're doing, will we celebrate in your faithfulness? Will we trust that you are there? And will we become better and better at supporting each other in those times? Amen.